Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Money for the Rest of Us. This is a personal finance show on money, how it works, how to invest it, and how to live without worrying about it. I'm your host, David Stein. Today is episode 456. It's titled, Is Tourism Harmful or Helpful? The Economic and Cultural Impact of Global Travel. I've been putting together a trip with Laprelle, my daughter, and son-in-law. We're going to Yucatan, Mexico. This is a gift for my daughter and son-in-law for graduating from university. We're heading to Yucatan. My son-in-law is a photographer, and he wanted to visit the town of Campeche. It's a historical, I think it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site town. Beautiful town. We've been there several times. And that's one of the places he wanted to go. And my daughter wanted to go explore the rainforest, particularly down near the ruins of Calakmul. One of the places we're going to stay is Valladolid. This is a beautiful town in the Yucatan, amazing history. And I used to live there back in the mid-80s, and I've been back 5 or 6 times. Typically, I've stayed at the Hotel Maison de Marques, which is right there in the center square, across from the cathedral. But the last 2 times I've stayed in Valladolid, I've rented through Airbnb. I looked at rates for the Hotel Maison de Marques. They wanted $258 a night for a room. Now, the nice hotel, the dinner is great in the courtyard there, but it seemed a little pricey. So I booked an Airbnb, 2 bedrooms, 2 baths in a quiet area of town that I know, $150 per night, including fees and taxes. Since 2013, I've stayed over 90 times using Airbnb in over 15 countries. I've also stayed at hotels, probably more hotels than Airbnbs. We go back and forth depending on how economical it is and convenient. How large our party is, when it's our entire family, we'll tend to rent Airbnbs. There are times when hotels are more economical, such as during the pandemic. We stayed at 4 or 5-star hotels for the rates you would typically pay for a 2 or 3-star hotel. This summer, hotels have been much more expensive, and Airbnb has been more economical. In looking then at Valladolid, there are 833 places to stay in Valladolid, renting a short-term rental on Airbnb. Is that a lot? I was trying to figure out, well, what's reasonable? There are just over 56,000 people that live in Valladolid. There's 15,000 housing units. And the one statistic, the one way that I saw to measure Airbnb density was how many Airbnb units are there per 1,000 residents. And I'm looking at Valladolid with 833 places to rent, 56,000 people. That's around 15 Airbnbs per 1,000 residents. If we look at other areas, this is some data from Statista. The most highly dense area for Airbnbs was Hawaii at 22.4. New Orleans was second at 19. And then Austin was about the same as Valladolid at 15. And so there's a lot of Airbnbs in Valladolid. And it'll be interesting to see how the town has changed since we last stayed there in 2017. When I looked to book Airbnbs in 2014, there were very few available. But there was some benefit of having so many Airbnbs is that there are places in Valladolid, and I'm familiar with, for example, the road out to the small, call it a Mayan village, Guaymas, that there's old haciendas that have been restored or other houses that have been restored to make into short-term rentals. in Campeche, the beautiful colonial town, all the exterior walls are painted of the buildings, the facades, so that looks very well kept. But at least last time we were there, if you look in the windows, there are places that the facade's there, but inside's rubble. And the benefit of Airbnb is it is provided capital, really, to be able to restore a lot of these houses. We booked an Airbnb on this trip for Campeche that is completely restored colonial house. And so that is one potential benefit. But there can be too much Airbnb. There was an article in the New York Times this week about a place called Hocha Town in Oklahoma. Population 219. Except on weekends, it can get up to 50,000 people visiting there. Prior to the pandemic, Hocha Town had around 400 cabins for rent on Airbnb. Now, there are more than 2,400. That's a 400% increase. The town recently started collecting sales tax on these Airbnb rentals, and they expect to get $1 million per month for a town of 200 people. David Francis, who works with the Oklahoma Tax Commission, said for a town of a few hundred people, this number is astronomical. The town is basically one giant Airbnb. Other towns have grappled with Airbnb. New York City recently effectively banned short-term rentals, requiring rental owners to register their Airbnb or other short-term rental with the city, minimum stay 30 days, and Airbnb has to confirm that the unit is registered with the city before it pays out any rental fees to the unit. In New York City, prior to this new regulation, there were over 22,000 short-term rentals and 123,000 hotel rooms. The density, if we look at that measure, the number of Airbnbs per 1,000 inhabitants, New York City is about 5, so not as dense as somewhere like New Orleans or Hawaii. The number of listings on Airbnb for New York has plummeted about 77% since this new regulation. And I've stayed in Airbnbs in New York City numerous times, although the last few trips, hotels have been more economical, probably because of this new regulation. Airbnb has added nearly 1 million active listings this year, and guests have stayed in 94,000 cities and towns. That's a record. Airbnb argues that this dispersal of tourism to areas where there are not hotels can have major economic benefits. The ability for individuals to stay. For example, we're staying in a town called Ispuhil down in southern Campeche to go to the ruins of Calakmul. There's nowhere to stay, really. Very, very few hotels that I saw. So we rented an Airbnb, which I think is essentially like a private hotel in this case. But we're seeing, at least according to Airbnb's most recent report, that the supply of new rental homes is greater than the demand. The supply is up 19%. The demand's up 14%. Bjorn Hansen, who is a adjunct professor at New York University, said a 5 percentage point difference between supply and demand is significant. And you could see if that continues that the host will have to drop their prices. Airbnb recently changed their algorithm to favor the hosts that the guests have liked the best, which actually makes it much easier to search. It's like anything. There's a power law. The most frequently stayed places with the highest ratings will be at the top of the search results, requiring those that don't have as high as ratings, and Airbnb comes out and says this, to have much lower prices in order to compete. AirDNA looks at the short-term rental industry in their mid-year outlook. Surprisingly, they didn't see, despite perhaps a supply-demand imbalance, the overall occupancy rate they see only falling slightly to around 57.6% from 59.5% in 2022. They think it'll be 57.6% in 2023. And so it hasn't been a huge change. The revenue per available room, which is a basic measure for the hospitality industry, they see it as $185 versus $187 last year. Back in 2019, it was $133. And so hosts at Airbnb have been able to charge more. Now, maybe the units are better or bigger. We don't know. Short-term vacation rentals has become a huge business. It's another example of financialization, which is, as Gerald Epstein describes in his book, it's the increasing role of financial motives, financial markets, financial actors, and financial institutions in the operation of domestic and international economies. Now, housing has always had a financialization aspect to it. Short-term vacation rentals in private homes is just an extension of that. And it's becoming a bigger and bigger business. We stayed at an Airbnb in Leeds that I think the owner, the management company, actually, it wasn't a really good experience at all. We had contact with six or seven different people over the period of a week, none of which were the supposed host, the two hosts of the Airbnb, because this is a big Airbnb company with, I think, over 15 locations. We're actually seeing private equity firms and hedge funds want to and starting to buy out these rental houses. TPG had 15 or so, or has in Florida, the private equity firm, to do with short-term rentals. I anticipate at some point there will be an equity real estate investment trust that focuses on short-term rentals. There are already equity REITs that focus on long-term housing rentals, owning single-family homes. So if we think about, is tourism, including the impact on housing, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Helpful or harmful? There's definitely economic benefits to the towns, to the host of Airbnbs. It creates jobs, can generate revenue for local businesses. It can create tax revenue for a town to invest in infrastructure. I suspect that Hochatown in Oklahoma a few years from now will have much better infrastructure than it does now because it has the revenue to support that. I was surprised, though, given how rampant tourism is, that it didn't make up as large a percent of economic output or GDP that I thought it would. Now, there's definitely some places. Number one global rank is Macau. 74% of GDP, this is for 2019, was tourism. Aruba's 62%. Maldives is 56%. So essentially islands, a lot of islands in Caribbean, where there's not a whole lot of industry other than tourism, it's a much bigger percentage. But then you have countries that we think of as maybe a tourist destination where it's higher, but not the biggest thing going on. Thailand, for example, tourism is 12% of GDP. Now, this is international tourism as opposed to domestic tourism. So if we include domestic, it will be higher than that. Greece is at 11%. Portugal is at 10%. Other European countries where we think of as, for example, Paris, I think, is the most popular city in the world for tourism. Overall GDP, international tourism makes up 2.6% of France's GDP, about the same as Italy's and Netherlands. U.S. is at 1% of GDP for international tourism. So when, from a GDP standpoint, international tourism, visitors to a given country, that shows up basically as an export because the country is essentially exporting these experiences to international visitors. Now, I would think that the ability to capture that would be a bit of a challenge. And so there's probably a lot of overlap and messiness to this. I saw some statistics in the U.S. where it estimates total tourism and travel makes up around 2-3% of U.S. GDP. In Mexico, it's 8%. There is an economic benefit to tourism. There's a benefit is it preserves the heritage and culture, arts and crafts, the cultural festivals, many of which are attended by tourists. It can lead to greater conservation efforts because tourists want to visit places that remain attractive and sustainable. And it can lead to some community development and income for the community to fund other projects, parks, or things that benefit the community and not just the tourist. There are some places that survived because of tourism. Some Brett mentioned Leavenworth. This is a town in Washington that the railroad passed by, and the town's leaders realized, well, we need to do something to sustain our town. And so they adopted a Bavarian theme. And now it's sort of this traditional winter festival as people visit, and a big part of their town is now tourism. Surprisingly, Santa Fe is very similar. You go to Santa Fe and it looks like these historic houses, but Santa Fe adopted this adobe style house and very strict building codes back in the early 20th century, really as a way to brand the town to bring in tourists. And it's worked phenomenally well in terms of tourism to Santa Fe. So there are many aspects of tourism that are positive. There are, of course, negatives. The environmental impact, pollution, litter, destruction of natural habitats, and that comes from over-tourism, where too many people visit one place at a given time, and it overwhelms the infrastructure. It overwhelms the culture. There are places I have visited in Kyoto, Japan, where just the experience of going to one of the ancient sites, the shrines, there were so many tourists, it just took away from the experience. Camden saw some of that in Vietnam. And he was recently in Cinque Terre in Italy, a place we, I think, were last there in 2013. Way, way more people now. They took a boat tour, and the captain of the boat, small boat, was just talking about how tourism, the traditional agriculture area of Italy, has hollowed out the town. There's people everywhere. And he mentioned one town in the northern part of that area where the captain said that they weren't smart enough to take advantage of the tourism, and so fewer people go there. But then the captain said, on the other hand, it's still a very pleasant place because there are so few tourists. And that's one of the real challenges. And you can see this as you travel. Before we continue, let me pause and share some words from this week's sponsors. If you've been using Mint to manage your finances, you know they shut down several months ago. Well, let me tell you about the budgeting solution, the financial tracking solution I've been using for the past number of months. It's Monarch Money. Monarch Money is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets like I've done. You can set goals, collaborate with your partner. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/David. What I like about Monarch is the ability to customize what I want to see. I have custom budget categories, and then I can go on to the dashboard and see where I'm above trend on some of my spending. I especially like that Monarch will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/David. That's monarchmoney.com/David for your extended 30-day free trial. We have a brand new sponsor to our show. It's Yahoo Finance. Yahoo's been around for decades. My first email outside of work was a Yahoo email address. But the financial side, I've used on occasion primarily to get data for dividend histories for particular funds or ETFs. But I was pleasantly surprised to get back on Yahoo Finance to see how it's evolved over the years. Now it's really a financial dashboard where you can get an understanding of what's going on with the markets. There are relevant articles from Bloomberg, Reuters, the Associated Press, and the Yahoo Finance team. You can look at the economic events calendar and see which data series are being released that day and what the consensus is. You can see the pulse of the markets at any time by going to Yahoo Finance. In addition, you could see all of your investments and retirement accounts in one place with Yahoo Finance. You get a consolidated view of multiple accounts. Yahoo Finance serves as a financial hub for your retirement accounts, but also comprehensive financial news and analysis. You need to check out Yahoo Finance, particularly if you haven't been there in a while. Check it out at yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. I saw one phone booth in London where there was a long queue to get one's picture taken in front of this phone booth because it was sort of this Instagram meme where everyone wanted. Now, there are other phone booths that are in London, but this one had a very long line. So there can sort of be the concentration of tourists. And there were parts in London that just were absolutely mobbed. But there were other places, Bedford Park area where we stayed at an Airbnb, there's just locals. Some other downsides to too much tourism is we can see cultural degradation, that there's just too much, that what made the place unique isn't like that anymore. Venice in Italy. The first time I was there, I think, was in 2004, and I was mesmerized. But even then, there was not as many locals as there used to be, and there are even fewer now, because it becomes this tourist place, so it can lose the authenticity that made it attractive to begin with, to where it's just buildings filled with tourists staying at Airbnbs and hotels. Some other challenges is if a country or a place is too reliant on tourism, there's some vulnerability there. We saw it during the pandemic. Places that were heavily reliant on tourism, when the tourists weren't coming, then they were decimated economically. There can be big seasonality that can lead to times where it's very overrun. When we were staying in St. Ives, one of our friends there would just talked about how nice it is when the summer months are gone, and she says we can have our town back because there are fewer tourists in the off season. But that can lead to much more variability in terms of the town's economy and some stresses if there's too much tourism during the summer season, but too few in other parts of the season, where it makes the employment situation challenging because workers can only get employed part of the year, and then comes the challenge for local housing, etc. And there could be an inequality aspect to it, as some households and businesses benefit from the tourism, where others, because housing prices skyrocket because of the vacationers that want to purchase second homes, the sheer number of vacation rentals, and the local populace gets priced out of the housing market and has to leave. And that's part of losing the authenticity, the cultural aspect of a place. And it is that cultural aspect that's so important. It's those interactions. What I love about travel is the conversations I've had, the people I have met, the local flavor. I recall being in our trip that Brett and I took in 2016 to Cuba. It was those conversations that I took away from. But there were also places. I remember sitting in the town square in Trinidad, Cuba, and it felt like there were tourists everywhere, just sort of there. I didn't like that. In some ways, a bigger city like a London, or in this case, Havana, where the tourists were more dispersed, or maybe there was one area they're at, but you could just go somewhere else a few blocks away and there were hardly any tourists. But over-tourism is a thing. Now, thinking about Cuba, when we went in 2016, the Obama administration had just opened a window to allow Americans to visit. You had to have a special reason, and in our case, we went as journalists because we had a podcast. But I think it's a good microcosm of how tourism has both helped and in some cases hurt Cuba. In Cuba, they have been under an economic embargo, a trade embargo with the U.S. since before I was born, the early 60s. The Cubans have been suffering for that long. Now, they have good health care, the education's okay, but 400,000 Cubans have fled the country just in the past 2 years, out of 11 million inhabitants. A few episodes ago, we talked about signs of a collapse or severe economic hardship, and one is people are leaving your country. They're choosing to leave. A good portion of that, in my mind, is certainly the communist system in place, but also the trade embargo. Now, it's challenging to figure out, well, how much is the trade embargo versus just the inefficacy of how Cuba has managed their economy, their leadership. Back when we went in 2016, we stayed at Airbnbs, and we stayed at one Airbnb that was hosted by Carlos and Jeanette. And they had been renting out a portion of their home as a bed and breakfast for 2 years. They're called Casa Particulares. They had income now, but he said, but there's nothing to buy. We'd just like to buy a lamp. But because of the trade embargo, there aren't lamps available or something of that sort. And after the Trump administration came, they closed that window. And so the ability of Americans to tour Cuba is even less than it was. Now, other countries can come. And Cuba has opened up its economy a little more. People can rent bedrooms for short-term rentals for vacationers. In some cases, they can have a private restaurant. And now they can sell things, basically a garage sale on the weekends to sell whatever they want. So small businesses, micro enterprises, and they need that to survive. I saw one NPR interview where a gentleman named Peralta said a leg of pork costs 14,000 pesos, just some meat, but he earns 15,000 pesos a month working at a state agency. And that's the challenge with the Cuban economy. They have this private economy, primarily tourism-driven, but all kinds of sort of side hustles that Cubans have. But the state economy is a disaster, and so salaries are super low that people basically have to hustle in order to survive. In the same NPR interview, the individual says, "You come and give me your shirt, and I'll sell it for 20 or 30 pesos. That's how we live." The other gentleman was he fixes gas stoves. And he has a little store, and he sells homemade cleaning products, crackers, drinks, flip-flops, all week long, even though it's illegal to do it during the week, only on the weekends. But he says, but I have to do it. I have to do it or we won't eat. There's a country where tourism basically is keeping people from starving because of the inadequacy of the government, but also, I believe, because of the trade embargo with the U.S. And I take very few political positions on this show, but that's one I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense to me after all these years, particularly when there are other communist countries that, while there might be some trade restrictions, such as with China, there is not an all-out trade embargo where it's illegal for Americans, households, and businesses to transact with the country, except for some select humanitarian exceptions. That doesn't make sense. But it's that tourism that's saving it until there's a change. But more than 50 years, there has been no change or enough change to give Cubans even more freedom to build, to create, to sell. They're incredibly entrepreneurial. Ultimately, though, when we think about tourism, it's more helpful than harmful. It just needs to be dispersed more so we don't get these pockets where it's just over-touristed. Given climate concerns, I think it's better to batch travel, to stay longer in one place, not to totally disallow travel, because I think the cultural educational benefit, the empathy created or received by traveling and interacting, it's worth it. But it needs to be done selectively in a way that hopefully it can be done more sustainably. But the educational, the cultural exchange is critical. But like many things, it needs to be kept within certain bounds, because then otherwise the benefit gets lost. The authenticity gets lost. The cultural exchange gets lost and the economic benefits get lost. That's episode 456. Thanks for listening. I have loved teaching you about investing on this podcast for over 9 years. Some topics, though, are just better explained in writing or with a chart. And that's why we have a weekly free email newsletter, The Insider's Guide. In that newsletter, I share charts, graphs, and other materials that can help you better understand investing. It's some of the most important writing I do each week. That's why I spend a couple hours on that newsletter on Wednesday morning, as I try to share something that will be helpful to you. If you're not on the list, please subscribe. Go to moneyfortherestofus.com to subscribe to the free Insider's Guide weekly email newsletter. Everything I've shared with you in this episode has been for general education. I'm not considered your specific risk situation. I've not provided investment advice. This is simply general education on money, investing, and the economy. Have a great week.